Our last speaker is Sarah Martin Anderson. Sarah is a PhD candidate in public policy at UC Berkeley, graduating this coming May. She also has a master's in public policy and a master's in public health from UC Berkeley. Her research focuses on the policy roots of health inequities, especially how policies shape parental decision-making in the early years of life. Sarah also has spent time working for the Alameda County Public Health Department and the University of California San Francisco Department of Pediatrics and Neonatology. Sarah?
Thank you. I am jazzed. I am so excited. I'm glad to be last because this is just, all this work is so amazing. I actually think this all fits together really well. So first, let's get this out of the way. No relationships to disclose. I've actually never been in a presentation where anyone had any relationships to disclose. I haven't had the honor yet of being part of this. So you'll notice that the title of my presentation actually changes between what you see in the program and what you see here. I'm a big fan of kind of giving away the end at the beginning. So what I'm going to talk about today is the WIC program. I'm going to talk about past program evaluations of this program show, for the most part, a negative relationship between breastfeeding duration and participation in the WIC program when you control for eligibility. I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to say, let's think very rigorously about who is selecting into this program. Let's construct a profile of who is likely to enter this program and look at whether that changes the relationship between the WIC program and breastfeeding duration. So I'm going to go quickly through what is selection bias in program evaluation and why it presents a huge methodological barrier to understanding whether this program is actually disincentivizing breastfeeding. Talk a little bit about coverage rates on WIC. A model of WIC take-up, more of a theoretical model of what determines whether a woman will enroll herself or her child in the WIC program. And do some empirical analysis and talk a little bit about the implications. I limit myself to one clip art per presentation. This is the one, so take it in. Selection bias is a very vexing issue when we're looking at whether this program actually has a causal effect on breastfeeding decision-making. We aren't sure whether it's just women who are least likely to breastfeed or the most likely to enter the program. So this is what the government says, basically, hey, it's not our fault. This person was already determined not to breastfeed. They came here, they got their free formula, which is what you get on WIC if you don't want to breastfeed, and therefore we are not responsible. Now, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but this is the GAO, which is an independent organization. It's a great, ranks as the number one place in the U.S. government to work. They say women on WIC may have these lower rates because WIC serves the population who are the least likely to breastfeed. And up until this point, we've only been able to construct a demographic risk profile of the people who are the least likely to breastfeed, but now using attitudinal scales and beliefs and perceptions, I'm going to posit that there's maybe a better way of doing that. So there's a lot of methods to minimize. I'm going to roll through these real quick because they're basically all the same thing. So they're basically all just regression adjustment. You throw in a bunch of observable variables on the right-hand side, and you hope that you got everything. But if selection is on the basis of something that you cannot observe, something innate and immeasurable, then you have a big, big problem. You can also do these other things, which no one has actually ever done, well, as far as I know. If you know of any super current work that's being done that's in instrumental variables or regression discontinuity, please tell me, because I'm very excited to read it. My take on it is maybe let's leverage some innovative measures, get a better idea of who is likely to breastfeed, and then see whether those women are the least likely to enter the program. Surprise, surprise, they are, but now I just ruined it, so you don't have to pay attention. So the Institute of Medicine was really big a couple years ago on highlighting research that looks at expanding the reach of WIC. Why do women who are eligible for this program choose not to enroll? Maybe they're being super rational. They're saying, you know what, the benefits of participating for me are not worth the cost of participating. And anyone who's either been on WIC, been in a WIC clinic, knows the costs of participating are pretty high. You have to go often. You have to get weighed. I mean, I don't know if you've had a baby. The last thing you want to do is, like, stand on a scale after you've had that baby, fill out dietary assessments. And not all clinics are the same. Some clinics are very fun to hang out in the waiting room. Some clinics are not so fun. So, and it can vary between blocks in a city. So the participation rates, these are the best estimates, I think, of participation in the WIC program. We have a denominator problem with the WIC program. Because undocumented immigrants are eligible for WIC, we don't really know how many are out there that we can actually say are in the bottom of that denominator. So this is the best. This is from Urban Institute. 35% of all infants, young children, and pregnant women are participating in the WIC program. That's their best estimate. And 50% of all infants. So infants are the highest proportion of participants. Eligibility rates about 55 to 65% nationally, and coverage rates, with that's the percentage of eligible people who are enrolled in the program, has there's a wide variation by state. The lowest state in this report is Nevada, 42.9% of eligible people are enrolled, and California has the highest, which I think is interesting because they are ranked next to each other. I'm going to actually black this out for a second because I don't want to go through all the subscripts, and I'm a big believer, like, shouldn't put anything up there that you're not going to actually walk through, and with the limited amount of time we have. I just want to say that a rational economic decision-making model is going to say, if the benefits outweigh the costs, I will participate. And the benefits of WIC are really only determined by two things: how many kids you have, because you get X times the benefits if they're 0 to 5, and how you choose to feed your baby. And if you choose to feed your baby formula, the market value of that food package is 4 times greater than if you don't. So that's very big in this rational decision-making model. If my costs are constant between me and you, breastfeeding or not, but your benefits are 4 times higher, I'm less likely to enter the program. So that's really all that says. So here's my main hypotheses. One, the women most fully committed to breastfeeding will be the least likely to enter the program, and that second and third time mothers, that's who I'm focusing on, versus first time mothers, will actually be less likely. The women who are most committed to breastfeeding, we're going to see a larger effect on these women because, for two reasons, I'm sorry, see how excited I get, two reasons: that they're better predictors of their future behavior because they've already had babies, so they're better predictors of the benefits of participating, and there's some controversy whether the 3 times the costs of participating outweighs 3 times the benefits. That's like the marginal value of those benefits actually decreases at a quicker rate than the costs do. So it's really, I think, probably driven, my hypothesis is mostly driven by the first, that they're just better at knowing whether it's going to be worth it. So I use the IFPS2, which we heard about earlier, and specifically using the prenatal module about attitudes towards breastfeeding, comparing it with, let me show you. So I'm going to take that prenatal attitudinal scale, and I'm also going to look at whether they breastfed and whether they entered the WIC program. So my outcome variables are going to be their predicted months of breastfeeding, how long they predict they will or how long they want to. I'm going to look at whether they take up the WIC program, and then I'm going to look at actual duration. I'm going to use the attitudes, and I'll show you exactly which variables I use as explanatory variables, and a host of demographic controls. I'm going to look at whether it differs by parity. I only use women who are income eligible for WIC, and that takes a little bit of finagling. If you've ever worked with the IFPS2, there's actually no WIC eligibility variable, so I had to create one based on historic kind of income brackets and do some little magic there. I think I did a pretty good job, and if you ever want to talk about how I did it, I'd be happy to talk to you. We do lose a lot of women over the course of this study. We're left with a highly affluent, more educated, more white group of people, which, as was discussed earlier, I actually think is beneficial for this study. I think it actually makes my conclusions a little more robust because we're dealing with a population who's actually more likely to breastfeed anyway. So in the first stage, I'm going to, sorry, this looks more complicated than it actually is. It's very straightforward. I'm going to do a linear regression, where my outcome variable is their expected months of breastfeeding. And on the right-hand side is going to be all those attitudinal variables, which I'm going to outline in just a second, and some demographic controls. I'm going to take the predicted values from that regression and use it as a score. So that's kind of my rank index. Women at the very top of that score scale are going to be the most committed to breastfeeding. They're going to be like the gung-ho women who are like, I can't wait, everybody's supportive, let's do this. And then you have the women on the other end who are committed to formula feeding fully in all ways. I don't just use the variables to say, what do you want to do? I actually bring in some other measures, some other attitudes. Then I'm going to apply it to program evaluation, where I look at how this score predicts duration and how the WIC program also predicts duration of breastfeeding, actual duration. So here's some results. Okay, this is the attitudinal factors only. Do they predict a stated commitment to breastfeeding? Yes, they do predict. Women who are more confident in breastfeeding, like we heard earlier, are more likely to have longer expected durations of breastfeeding. Notice that the comfort in nursing in front of close friends really has no significant relationship with how long they expect to breastfeed, but that comfort in nursing in front of people you don't know very well predicts commitment to breastfeeding, as does the baby's father and your own mother. When we add in demographic controls, the significance of those remain, so they're very robust to putting in all the demographic controls. If you have a chance to look at the handouts that are on this session's website, you get the full table. You can Google me as well. You can see the whole paper. I find it very interesting that the R-squared, so the proportion of what we can explain of a woman's just expected duration, for the attitudinal factors only is 3 times larger than the demographic controls we're normally using to say who is the least likely to breastfeed. So that's an interesting takeaway, that these attitudinal factors are actually more predictive. So does it predict WIC take-up? Well, overall, it does. The proclivity to breastfeed does predict WIC take-up for the full analysis sample. Women who are more likely to breastfeed are less likely to enter the WIC program, but when you break it up by parity, that only holds for second and third time mothers. So they're negatively selecting. So if you remember back to whatever class you had the pleasure of taking, if we have negative selection bias, it means we're overstating the true effect of WIC on breastfeeding. So if we constantly see these negative durations and negative gaps between WIC and non-WIC women, for second and third time mothers, we have evidence that we're probably overstating what the program is actually doing to these women. So now let's look at, well, how would this change a program evaluation? So I want to draw your attention to that first row, and you'll see for all mothers without controlling for proclivity to breastfeed, remember this is prenatal, so it's affected by WIC because it's before they ever even enter the WIC program or before they have their baby. You'll see the naive estimation shows a couple months difference in duration between WIC and non-WIC mothers. But once we add in that proclivity score, it goes away, becomes insignificant, which we would expect if we think there is negative selection bias. Excuse me. One other thing I want to draw your attention to, and I don't want you to pay too much attention to the size of these coefficients because those standard errors are very large in parentheses. So I know it looks like, wow, like 21 weeks, that's a long, you know, don't worry about that. Worry about direction, worry about significance. Notice that first-time mother's proclivity to breastfeed doesn't even actually predict what they do. So a woman's expected duration of breastfeeding is not predictive of their actual breastfeeding duration for first-time mothers. This means if we're treating all women the same in a program, first, second, third-time mothers, you know, maybe we need to alter our messages a little bit because they really don't, I don't know if you've ever been a first-time mother and known one. They really don't know what's coming. It's the second and third-time mothers who are like, I've been there, I'm good. So this got me thinking, so who's actually driving this overall relationship between WIC and breastfeeding outcomes? And this is really interesting, so bear with me, because I take that score, I break it into 5 groups. So that 5th group there is the most likely to breastfeed. The group number 1 is the least likely to breastfeed. So for first-time mothers, you see that gap between WIC and non-WIC is really driven by the women who are the most likely to breastfeed, which is funny. I mean, you look, that's a huge gap. It's statistically significant. So we have this group of women, all eligible for WIC. Those most committed to breastfeeding have a very big disparity in their breastfeeding duration. And you see it a pretty big disparity in the low end too, which is interesting. And then for multiparous mothers, which is second and third combined, they're really driven by that 3rd group, which I call like the women on the fence, who are kind of undecided about a lot of things. They're not really sure of their father's support. They're not really sure if they're confident. These are actually the women who are driving the overall relationship between WIC and breastfeeding duration. So that's pretty interesting to look at. So here's some implications, just kind of wrapping up. Attitudinal variables They're better predictors of breastfeeding commitment than demographic variables. If demographic variables are the only things predicting take-up of this program, then we are all golden because we can control for those. But maybe these attitudinal variables are doing a better job at capturing that unmeasurable aspect of a woman's decision-making. Second and third-time mothers are likely negatively selecting into WIC. Those who are most committed to breastfeeding are maybe determining that this program is not worth the cost of participating. So what that means for policymaking is if you want more multi-parent mothers, you either have to lower the costs of participating or increase the benefits. First-time mothers are very bad predictors of their future behavior. And the negative association between WIC and breastfeeding becomes insignificant after controlling for that prenatal, pre-WIC proclivity to breastfeed. And that's it. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thanks, that was a great talk.
Thanks.
Very interesting. When you talked about the costs and benefits and women choosing that, were you, I know IFPS 2 is 2005 to 7 out, remember when the new breastfeeding package came into effect for WIC?
Mm-hmm.
It was after that. So yeah. I'm just curious, it would be really interesting to see whether that's been effective in making it more appealing to women.
Yeah, right, because that's kind of where this comes up, increase the benefits for breastfeeding women or decrease the cost. And we'll see if, you know, in evaluations of the food package changes, whether that increase in benefits worked, and then maybe trying some decreasing of costs, you know, making it a little easier, especially for women who've already been in WIC with their first babies. They've been through before, so maybe we can make it a little easier for them to recertify. We can provide some other, you know, maybe have more videos in the waiting room. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways we can lower costs, but yeah, that would be very interesting.
Right.
Everyone's excited.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.